what you got right there?
Well, what we got is one of our peoples.
One of our loyal viewers.
Sent us something, and we want to share it with today. He says, Greg/Travis, I want to thank you guys. Your YouTube videos have been very helpful, and your products have made very well. The two things, yada, yada. Enclosed, you will find a jar of ambrosia, sweet corn cob jelly.
Yeah, sweet corn cob jelly.
I emailed and messaged you earlier in the year and told you that I'd share some with you, so I figured I would send you some down when we can even.
Let me finish. All right. When we can our corn, they'll put 20 or so cobs in a stock pot, cook it down all day long, remove, filter the liquid. Add sugar and pectin. Says his kids love it. They call it honey and sunshine. Show them what it looks like.
So what we got here, folks, is a jar.
Cob jelly.
Sweet corn cob jelly.
Now, I've heard of this, but I've never had any.
Well, we fixing to have some today.
We fitting to have some.
So what he said was he hoped Miss Hoss would make us some homemade biscuits.
And we got some old, around here we call these cat head biscuits.
Yeah. So she made us some.
You can see them right there. That's fine eating right
Lay
there.
Lay that right down there, and I'm going to smear you one out there. We're going to taste test here. We're going to partake. I've got it.
We're going to break bread.
We're going to break
bread. I'll just go with a half right here.
That's what we're going to do.
Okay.
All right, spread it out.
Putting plenty on there now.
You got enough? Feel some more.
I want a little bit more. I got a feeling this is going to be good.
It's got to last a long time.
That's good right there. If you didn't know no better, you would have no idea that was made with sweet corn.
I get the honey.
You taste the honey?
It's got a lot of honey flavor to it. You know, I got to think about that thing. When the cream or sweet corn, there's a lot of goody left on that cob.
Yeah.
And what they're doing, boiling it down, they're getting the goody off the cob, making the jelly out of it.
Quite resourceful, if you think about it. Very, very resourceful.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say hey to everybody. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. I'm Travis, and this is Greg. We got a really good show planned for you tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about no-till gardening versus till gardening, some pluses and minuses of each. But before we do, we always have a little show and tell segment, talk about what's going on around here. I do want to thank Eric for sending us the cob jelly. That's good stuff right there, and we'll be enjoying that.
I had no idea.
In the next few weeks. That might not make it very long, but we'll certainly enjoy it for a few weeks here.
Well, you know, it's good for me to try things I've never tried before, and a buddy of mine was telling me his grandma used to make watermelon rind. She used to pickle watermelon rind.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was very unusual.
I never tried any of those.
Yeah. So maybe one day we'll try some more.
Another thing I want to try is, I've seen a bunch of people on a Row by Row group make it, and stuff called cowboy candy. It's like sugared jalapenos, and it looks real good. I've seen a bunch of YouTube channels making it. I just hadn't ever made any. That stuff looks good, too. Let's see what we got going on right here. Greenhouse is still popping. Lots of transplants going on in there. Those things are taking off, growing. Your multiplier onion video had a lot of people commenting on that. Have you made any conclusions?
Boy, I tell you, I went back and forth and back and forth on this. I'll tell everybody the latest updates. Excuse me. So I got this friend of mine that lives up in Indiana, and Ryan and his family have been growing commercially shallots and onions and garlic for years. He's a pretty sharp guy. So I sent him an email with my video. I said, Ryan, tell me what you think. So he called me yesterday. He said, Greg, I don't think that's a shallot.
You thought it was a shallot?
I thought it was a shallot. I was leaning that way, but now I'm back. Now I got one other person I'm going to reach out to. I was going to call yesterday that I respect their opinion. This pretty sharp, but they wouldn't take my call. So I got to try again and see if I can get through. They wasn't in the office yesterday. As this moment, they're not, he says they wasn't a shallot. I'm going to go with that until I know any difference. What I am going to do is I'm going to plant the shallot side by side with these multiplier nest onions and see what the characteristics look like between the two. See if there's any things that's similar or not similar, kind of test it there. But as we state right now, we can't really classify them.
Speaking of shallots, we've got elephant garlic, big load of elephant garlic and shallots, truckload of them on the way here. Those should be on the site pretty soon. We've got three varieties of shallots, one called Ambition, which is a traditional kind of round shallot. We've got one called Monique, which is a semi-long, so it's a little more elongated. And then one called Roderick, which is a banana shallot. Mm-hmm. All three really good varieties. We'll have those in 1 pound, 5 pound, and 10 pound options there with the shallots. And
let me say this right here about shallots. And I know some of y'all are out there are like me. You're not really well versed in shallots. If you like to cook and you like to use onions to cook with, you need to think about growing you some shallots to cook with. It's a lot different flavor, and in my humbled opinion, I think shallots are a lot better to cook with than onions. Now, nobody likes a good sweet onion better than I do, but they don't have the complexity of the flavor profile that a shallot has when you start putting them in casseroles and dressings and things like that.
Shallots can take a good bit of cool weather. I would say maybe a little bit more than regular onions can. So,
One more thing, shallots are day neutral. So you don't have to worry about, you can order any three of these varieties that we're going to carry anywhere in the USA, you can plant them and be okay, because it doesn't matter where onions you got, short day, intermediate, and long day. You know, you don't have to worry about shallots. Pick out the one you want, order it, and you'll be successful with it.
And if you plant them in fall, they'll actually multiply on you and do a little bit better. You can plant them in spring. We did that last year. We had a pretty decent crop, but we're going to plant them in fall this year.
Ryan told me, he says, you're going to get a lot better. We was late to the party last year. He said, you're going to get a lot bigger bub plant them in the fall down where we live.
Mm-hmm. And then the elephant garlic is also really, really cold tolerant. No matter where you are, everybody plants garlic in the fall. He told us to do some really nice big elephant garlic cloves we got coming. So we'll be planting those probably early November when we get all the other alliums in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of onions, one more thing. We've got some new onion varieties coming down the pipeline soon. I got some Texas Legend seeds on the way. A couple other varieties I've got. I've got a variety called Walla Walla, which is a really popular intermediate day onion.
Yep.
I got Red Creole, which is we didn't have a red onion, so I've got that one. I've got another bunching onion called the Warrior Bunching Onion, which is a really nice one, the AAS winner. And then I've got
American Selection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I've got one, Cipollini Onion.
Cipollini. Now, I've always wanted to grow Cipollini.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go to the grocery store, they're kind of expensive. And everybody raves about cooking with the Cipollini onion.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Cipollini onion is an intermediate day.
I'm pretty sure it's a short day, but I have to get back with you on that.
I think we could probably grow this far south. The people I've talked to said it's worth trying, but
it's got a shorter maturity date. It's only about 80 days compared to
really good high reviews on the flavor.
It's flattened, and the one we're gonna have is yellow.
A lot of people like to roast them,
so we'll have those. So lots of new onion varieties coming soon there. One other thing I did want to mention, I thought this was, sometimes some of the comments we get on our videos, sometimes they just make me laugh. And somebody, I was on one of my tarpon videos, I think it was a lady, maybe not, but commented on there, basically implying, why would I want to kill all the weeds? That there's so many weeds out there that have medicinal purposes and that you can eat. We should let the weeds thrive, and she talked about how you could eat dandelions.
Well, evidently the lady doesn't know what the definition of a weed is.
Maybe not, but if you ever see me out in the yard eating dandelions,
I have seen people make dandelion jelly, so we may have some dandelion jelly to eat one of these days.
All I'm telling you is I'm gonna stick with my collards and my greens, and if you do see me eating dandelions, you need to call
somebody.
Call the police or the mental hospital one, because I have lost it. All right. So today we're going to get into a discussion And this is kind of a hot topic out there, and it seems to be a very polarizing topic. The people who are really hardcore on the no-till side, boy, they get fired up about no-till, and the people that are against no-till and want to cultivate their soil, they get fired up about it. It's a very polarizing subject, and I thought it was very timely because I played around with this a little bit this year with where I planted my corn. I went as no-till as I could, and some things were enlightened to me, and I'm not, you know, sold on going all the way either way. But there were some things I noticed, some challenges with no-till, and then some advantages there that I want to talk about. So let's first define no-till. Now this can be a little bit hairy out there because you got a lot of YouTubers and stuff claiming they're no-till, but yet they'll still come in there with a tilter or something and cultivate that first couple inches. When I say no-till, I mean no disturbance at all. Basically what the big cotton farmers around here do, they plant a cover crop and then they have a big seeder that sows in to that residue. So we're not disturbing the ground at all. That's what we're if you're using a tilter or something like that, or a wheel hoe, we call that min till. But no till means no disturbance at all, except for when you put that seed in the ground.
Some people would argue and say that means minimal till.
Right.
Still the same thing. It's no more than what you have to.
Right. So now that we've got it defined, no till means nothing. Let's talk about the benefits of no-till, and then we'll talk about some of the downsides that we've seen with it. So let's start off. The first benefit of no-till is moisture conservation in the soil. So if the soil layer is not broken, it's going to hold water a lot better than if it's cultivated.
Absolutely. Well, you know, if you've ever had a garden situation that was wet and you wanted it to dry out, the best thing you can go in there is go in there and hair it, or run your wheel hoe through there with a cultivator tooth, something, bust that crust up, and she'll dry out a lot quicker than she would just leaving her bare. So yeah, moisture retention is a big thing, and that can go both ways. They are situations where you want to get the moisture out of the soil, and these situations where you don't. But when you're practicing no-till, you don't have that advantage of being able to dry it up as quick as you do when you're doing it untill, no-till, conventional.
So we learned this firsthand when we did the demo garden at the expo. It's flat as a flitter out there and doesn't drain worth the poop.
Right.
And we'd get a couple inches of rain, and we'd have to wait a couple days. But as soon as we could get in there with the tiller, we'd have to get in there.
Or with a wheel hoe. We can take the wheel hoe with the cultivator teeth and run through there. It'll make a big difference as far as drying it up.
So advantages and disadvantages there, but no-till traditionally is going to preserve your soil moisture.
Yes, absolutely.
The second one, which is the big one around here, the main reason why the big guys do it is erosion control. Mm-hmm. If you've got something on that soil or that soil layer is not broken, you're much less likely to lose soil during heavy rainfall periods.
The biggest advantage I see to no-till is erosion control.
Yeah. So you can keep your water running where you want it, all that good stuff. The third one here is the preservation of your soil biology. And this one is a big one, but it's going to be, I won't say it's regional, but this one will be more important in certain climates than others. Down here where we are, the dirt, the sandy soil just gets so hot, it's hard to have a lot of natural soil biology. We don't get a lot of earthworms in our soil. Even if I was to leave my garden soil undisturbed for a couple of years, I really wouldn't see a lot of earthworm activity in there. Not to say we don't try to, you know, with cover crops and fish emulsion and stuff like that to feed our soils, but we can't ever expect to have some of these really just rich looking soils that you see a lot of these channels up north have.
So the carbon content of your soil is a good measure of how healthy your soil is. Carbon is the same thing as organic matter. So when we look at a soil sample, we really want 2-5% constitutes a pretty healthy soil condition. Now down here in the south, we get 2%, we're pretty dead gum proud of that. You people up north, y'all can get around that 5%. But if you 2 to 5, man, you're in great shape. And down here in the South, we may have to settle a little bit on the bottom side of that too. But when you do cultivation, you break that, you speed the degradation of that carbon down. So when you do go out there and plow your soils, harrow your soils, dish your soils, whatever it may be, and you disturb that soil, you cause that carbon to degrade a lot quicker than you would by leaving it alone.
Fellow told me the other day, and I don't know if there's any truth to this, he said, you know that smell of freshly cultivated dirt? He said, what you're smelling is carbon. Just being gone up into the atmosphere.
I'll chew on that a little bit.
Yeah, I will too, but we'll see. And then the last one there, so it's going to preserve your soil biology, especially in areas where you have richer organic matter in the soil. And then the last one here is that you're not burying weed seed. So no matter what, if you're no-till or till, whatever your situation is, weed seeds will naturally get deposited on top of your garden via animals and wind. You know, birds pooping and wind blowing weed seeds into your garden. If you cultivate that soil, you're inevitably going to be turning those weed seeds into the soil to some extent. If you're not, they kind of stay on top of the soil. Mm-hmm. This is very applicable with the big farmers around here. They kind of use this strategy for pigweed control. They have found that if they don't disturb the soil, they'd get hardly any pigweed pressure. And that's why they do. That's another reason why the big cotton guys do no-till. It really reduces their pigweed pressure.
Yeah, but no-till in our area in the farming is on a downward trend. You're not seeing as many people do no-till around here on the big scale as what you did 10, 15 years ago. And one reason for that is the pigweed resistance to glyphosate with Roundup. In our area, with you talking about conventional farming, there is nobody that does no-till without the use of GMO crops and chemicals.
Right, right.
I'm not gonna say it's impossible, but nobody uses it. It's not an accepted practice in this area.
Right, so no-till, true no-till is, I always say it can be done on a really big scale, like the guys around here do it, but that involves GMO crops and spraying Roundup on them. It can be done on a super small scale, the raised bed where you're just hand planting everything, but on a medium scale, kind of like what we try to grow, a small to medium scale, it's tough.
It's nearly impossible. Now, if you got a flower bed and you want to go out there and plant you a lettuce in your flower bed that's got mulch or pine straw or wood chips or whatever, you want to plant you a couple of tomato plants out there, that is considered no-till. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about growing a garden and trying to grow some food. So if you're just playing with one or two plants, it's possible to put them in your flower beds to grow? Absolutely. But if you want to actually go out there and have plenty of bounty and actually grow in a lot of your food, it's tough to do.
So we talked about some of the benefits, and there's no debating those benefits.
Oh, absolutely.
No doubt about that. Now let's talk about some of the downsides to no-till. Some of these I've experienced here recently. One of the big ones is when you do decide to go to no-till, you're going to notice that you have a lot more weeds because you're not disturbing that soil anymore. With a no-till situation, the only way to suppress weeds is to either tarp or keep layering mulch and compost on top of those weeds. And I can tell you from where I planted my corn, where I had the sun hemp and the tarp, and I basically no-tilled that area. The first weeds I had coming up, I haven't had a lot of weed pressure, nut grass. No-till means lots of nut grass. And if you live in an area where nut grass is not really a problem, then you're not gonna have an issue. But I don't think if you got a lot of nut grass, no-till is not the way to go for you, because nut grass, the way to get rid of it is just to aggravate it to death. If you just keep, leaving it in the ground there, feeding it, it's going to be hard to ever get rid of it.
The weeds that you do have, if you're doing no-till, you're very limited on the way you can handle them.
Right.
Yeah. So you can only go out there and pull them up, basically. Mm-hmm. So you don't have the advantage of being able to use equipment to go out there and take care of it and speed your process up.
And the whole aspect of covering the weeds over time, that can take years and years to actually put a damper on your weed population. Especially with something like nut grass. So you're going to have a lot more weeding is going to be a much more of a challenge with a no-till situation than if you're cultivating. Mm-hmm. The second one here, and I've noticed this with my corn plot, rain doesn't stick very well in a no-till situation.
It doesn't absorb into the soil.
Right.
Flip side of that is it didn't wash it away. So it's catch 22 there.
Yeah, yeah. But if you need a good rain and need it to absorb, if I know a good rain's coming, I like to go out there with my wheel hoe and just scratch it up a little bit. And so all that rain's going to soak in and kind of stay where it is. Mm-hmm.
Like a sponge.
The third one, and I've seen this one as well recently, is you don't get as good seed germination in a no-till situation. Seeds like good seed to soil contact, they just do better if you've got cultivated soil and you can plant that seed in there and kind of pack it in
now
there.
We're talking about a garden situation. We're not talking about a huge field where they got these big heavy duty mechanical expensive no-till planters. We're talking about a garden situation where you're limited on the way you can get them down in there.
Yeah. I got a good stand of sweet corn coming up and peaches and cream, but I didn't get as good a stand I would have if I would have went in there with a tiller beforehand and then planted on top of it. So you just don't get as good seed to soil contact. Your seed germination is going to be reduced some. The next downside of no-till is that it just takes a lot more time and energy. If you're doing no-till on a home garden scale or even a small market farm scale, you're going to have to be doing a lot of mulching. And, you know, acquiring that mulch takes time, putting that mulch out, and then the biggie for me is moving it out of the way every time you replant.
And you got to figure in how much nitrogen and fertility that mulch is going to tie up when you start fertilizing your plants. So you got to take that consideration too. If you got wood chips there, we all know wood chip ties up nitrates. It takes nitrates to break them down, and it's going to tie up a lot of that. So you got to figure all that in too. So it could get a little bit complicated trying to figure out your fertility needs if you got a real thick mulch layer. How are you going to get it down there too? Is it going to get tied up in that mulch before it ever gets to the plant? Things like that.
Yeah, yeah. And proponents of no-till would argue that if you've got all your biology and chemistry in the right place, that you don't need to add any inputs. But show me somebody growing a decent crop of sweet corn without giving them any nitrogen and
Say in Alaska, for instance, if they have a different soil profile than what we have here, they are soils that are a lot richer and have a lot more nutrient value than what we do. So it does vary to your geographical region. That being said, anybody's got to add a little nitrogen to corn.
Onions.
Yeah.
Right. The fifth reason here, and kind of the final reason that downside of no-till is that you get a lot more soil compaction. It's a lot more likely for your soil to get compacted. And why would this be a problem? Well, with some crops, carrots, some other crops, it's harder for roots to penetrate a really compacted soil layer. They almost like softer soils to be able to dig down into. And also with no-till, you have to be careful to walk. You kind of have to have designated beds, and you can't be walking on them because they're just going to get compacted.
You can't practice crop rotation like you would otherwise because you're not moving into your walkways. Your walkways are pretty much permanent.
Right. And for me, I like to be one with my garden. I like to get out there and walk all over it. And
yeah. Waller in it.
Yeah. Play in the dirt. So. That doesn't really
Waller,
work.
Waller, that's a silly term, because y'all don't know where you get down in there, you all in it. Waller.
So kind of the, before we get into some final points, the takeaways here is that there are plenty of benefits to doing no-till, and it does work on some scales.
Yep.
And for some soil types. There are also some downsides to no-till out there, and I would say that it's kind of like politics. You know, the far right is probably way off, the far left is probably way off, and the more practical solution, it may be somewhere closer to the middle. So I would say minimum till is probably the best way you go.
Absolutely. The least you go in there and disturb that soil and to reach your goal, the healthier soils you're going to have and the better off it's going to be. Key word there was to reach your goal. What's your goal? Your goal, want to produce a nice garden, have plenty of harvest there. a quality fruit? Absolutely. But you want to do this with a minimal amount of soil disruption there, the better off you're going to be. However, we have found that you got to disturb it. You got to do that for different reasons. Sometimes it's just you got to do it.
If you're going to go in there and plant a cover crop, you're just going to have way better success if you go in there and cultivate that soil a little bit before you plant it. That's just the way it is. So, you know, do it sparingly. Do it as you need it. But sometimes it is does seem necessary.
So let's throw a little challenge out there. So if anybody knows anybody that's doing no-till without the use of chemicals in a garden or a market farm situation, whether this be a YouTuber or influencer, what do you got?
No-till based on our definition.
Send us that. Let's take a look at it. It'd be interesting. We'd be glad to take a look at it and see what practices they're using. I would have an open mind about it. I'd like to see it. I've not seen it yet.
I've yet to see any YouTuber, anybody out there growing as diverse crops as we grow in a no-till situation that really had a garden that someone will be proud of. I've seen a lot of people out there doing it, but
being successful at it.
Being successful, I don't see a whole lot of their harvest. A few other things to consider that what I don't understand about some of the no-till people is I know they're trying to emulate some natural forest or whatever, but they just randomly put plants out, and I don't think that's a very good use of space. My mind is very analytical. I got to have it in rows. I got to put as much food in that garden space as I can plant, and it just looks better when you do it that way.
Hence, row by row.
Row by row. That's what we're about here.
Huh.
We got a few questions from last week's show, and if you have any questions, or please give us some comments on what you think about no-till versus tilling and why you do one versus the other. Like we said, there's no right or wrong way here. We just want to kind of illuminate the difference between the two. So tell us what you like to do, why you like to do it, and if we missed any benefits or downsides, tell us that as well. So
we got a couple questions.
We do. And if we answer your question on the show, send us an email to cusserve@hosstools.com and we'll send you a nice little prize.
Number one is from Jackie Ashley. I don't have my glasses on, Ashley.
Uh-oh.
I appreciate the spacing and fertilizer needs for I appreciate the spacing and fertilizer needs you discussed for broccoli, etc. Can I get the same information for tiger collar transplants and the all top turnips?
Sure. I would say the fertilizer program for the collards and the turnips is going to be pretty daggum similar to what we mentioned for the broccoli and other stuff. Around that, you know, 1 pound per 100 feet pre-plant range and you know, close to those same numbers, give or take a little bit. On the collard transplants, I'd space them just like I do the broccoli, 1 foot apart. Now, I will plant collards on double rows with drip in the middle. I can get 2 rows out of the same amount of space that I can usually get one. I'll stagger the second row so the plants are in between the plant on the first one. The turnips, the all-top turnips, a lot of people would say you should just direct seed those, and you very well could do that. These all-tops, I've got some of those transplants growing now. I'll probably end up putting those about 6 to 8 inches apart. I'll stack them in there a little thicker than I will the collards.
I would direct seed my all tops, and I would put them a little closer than that. I'd go probably about 4 to 6 inches. I plant them pretty thick.
Almost like mustard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, and our second question comes from John and Lee S., and they said, hey guys, was wondering, do you have any problems with nitrate buildup in your soil or produce using that much nitrogen? How do you flush out the excess soil? So it is, as we were talking last week, we were mentioning using 20-20-20 and products with nitrate, fast-acting products, but we do use a lot of fish emulsion and other things. So
there's no such thing as nitrate builds up in the soil. Nitrogen is extremely soluble. It leaves out quicker than what we would like for it to. So if it's not up to it by the plant, it leaves out in a hurry, and that can be a problem. But that's a problem for it leaving out, not for it hanging around. What we can have is a buildup of salts in the soil from using these fertilizers like 20-20-20. Chilean nitrate has a fairly high salt index to it. So salt buildup in soils can be a concern using these conventional fertilizers. Here's the way you counteract that. You don't use no more than what you need, and you put it directly where that plant needs it to take up, not to waste any fertilizer and not to put any more out there than what it absolutely needs. I don't like the idea of broadcasting fertilizer. I think you're wasting a lot of fertilizer that way, and you're putting a lot of salts out there that's going to be there a while. Put that fertilizer right next to the plant, either put it into the drip tape so it takes it up. You're not wasting any fertilizer, you're not wasting any nitrogen, and you're not putting any excess salts out there. If by some mean that you're gardening in an area that has had salt built up from the previous owner or from whoever, and you have a salt buildup situation, you want to till those soils, you want to add gypsum. Gypsum's a great sponge to soak up some of those excess salts. Also, grow you a lot of cover crops. So keep something growing all the time, and it'll help take those salts out of the soil.
Yeah, and I would say, with me personally, I've been trying to, every other time I fertilize, using the Liquifish as opposed to the 20-20-20.
Absolutely. Now, we don't want to give the impression that we always use these conventional fertilizers, such as 20-20-20. We think they're great products.
It just makes the math a little easier when we're talking about it.
But by all means, use the manures. If you have access to some manures, use that. If you got some good quality compost, man, they ain't nothing no better than good quality compost. So there's all kind of other means out there that have very little salts in them that can do. We try to use a combination of a little of it all so it all balances out.
And the cover crops really, really help. You know, do your warm weather cover crop, cool weather cover crop, and that
legumes.
That will keep any kind of buildup from happening. Okay, guys, so everybody needs to start thinking about onions, shallots, elephant garlic, because it's coming soon for just about everybody.
You know what I got on my mind?
What?
Corn cob jelly.
Corn cob jelly. And then I just wanted to drop a little reminder. Don't forget about this stuff right here. We've got this really good onion fertilizer, this ammonium sulfate, on the site now. And this is going to help you grow them big shallots, onions, leeks, and elephant garlic. All right, that's going to do it for tonight.
Yep.
Let's get out of here.
See you later.